This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Open for Business is powered by BossBolay.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
BFM 89.9, good morning and welcome to Open for Business, the show that dives into the journeys and ventures of entrepreneurs and business leaders. To kick off the week leading up to International Women's Day happening this Friday is Charmaine Wong, CEO and co-founder of Cult Creative. Founded in 2020, Cult Creative started as a networking platform for creative professionals with a stated mission to redefine content creation and foster collaboration. Now, while the business model has changed and today it's connecting brands with creators, using technology to help brands find the right creator for them, streamlining workflows and facilitate creator payments. And helping them do this, they raised recently a $500,000 seed round from the Hive Southeast Asia and is changing up their business model, which saw the closure of its jobs portal app towards the end of last year. Today on Open for Business, we speak with Charmaine about the lessons learned along the way, as well as how she plans to deploy the recently secured funds, what the change in business model entails and means for the business going forward. And we also talk a little bit about the journey and starting in the midst of the MCO. Charmaine, welcome to the studio.
Thank you so much for having me, Roshan.
Charmaine, let's rewind back the clock to about 4 years ago. Mm. We're going to talk about a lot of things. We're going to talk about the business model change and all the lessons learned along the way. But first things first, what was the initial market gap you saw and wanted to address back when the company started in 2020?
Right. So back then it was COVID. I had ran a pretty successful event company called Tish. We were servicing brands like Disney, Nestle, Adidas. COVID happened. We couldn't evolve. We were quite an old school event company, and I had to let go of all these full timers and freelancers. And during then, I realized that they came back to me to find work, but there was no platform and there was only LinkedIn, and LinkedIn didn't really serve creative people because there was no portfolio section. So that's why we started Cult Creative. Cult Creative had a very clear mission to build a community of future-focused creatives and also a job platform. And that's how we match brands to creative professionals.
And today, while the job platform is no longer around, you are still running the connecting creators to brands today. Before we move on, though, I have to ask, what was it like building this business during the MCO? It was new to all of us, and you were taking what you described as this older creative business into a new realm during the time.
It started off as a community effort to just kind of galvanize creative professionals to come together, support each other, and also find opportunities together, right? I enlisted Lina and Manisha, my co-founders then, to sort of come together and introduce job opportunities, freelance opportunities, workshops, after which it kind of grew into a job platform.
So it started off as a community effort first, and then it built up into something that eventually became its own company, its own business.
I mean, we talked to the creators and we knew that there were a lot of workshops back then and sort of upskilling opportunities, but a lot of them still came back to, we need opportunities to earn financial freedom. So that's why we spoke to companies to offer jobs.
So it started off as a community, then became, or was supposed to become, the LinkedIn for creative people, essentially. And that has shifted. Right now, the platform is about connecting brands and creators, and the new business model is focusing very much on the digital marketing landscape in this respect. So talk to us about how this business has evolved over the last 3.5 to 4 years and why these changes were needed.
Okay, good. Really good question, because we had early success, right? In actually October 2022, we had raised a pretty big round with VCs and angels, about 700K.
Wow.
And we had a database of 13,000 creators from Malaysia, Indonesia, Singapore, Australia, and even 1,100 companies. But what we realized is we actually didn't have a product market fit, right? Mm-hmm. And with that whole mentality of growth at all costs, we started scaling too quickly. We hired a tech team. And to be honest, the three of us were non-tech co-founders. I think we scaled too quickly. We even entered Indonesia, but quickly learned that that wasn't viable. The business model was not repeatable. We were charging people job tokens, right? So that means you purchase one job token, you get matched to one graphic designer. So that was not, we constantly needed to acquire new customers. It was tough to get the next customer. that time as well, Manisha had passed away very suddenly. Mm-hmm. And then we soon realized that, man, none of us were tech people, so we couldn't really build a tech platform, right? So by June, I realized that we only had 2 months runway. And if I didn't And if we didn't do anything, by August, we would have, you know, bungkus lah. So we dug deep, right? Had to restructure, had to do layoffs, unfortunately, and also kind of go back to square one, talk to the customers, talk to the creators, right? And look back at the data, like, what did they need? So looking at the creators first, we realized that a lot of them were side hustling, right? They had full-time jobs as social media managers or videographers, but they were actually content creators as well on the side. And looking back at the data for our employers, a lot of them were posting up jobs like TikTok, Instagram Reels, content creators. So we saw a need. So we tested it out. And this time around, we're not going to do that one-off way of doing it. So we decided to do a subscription model. And that's how it started. It became a monthly subscription model for brands to connect with at least four content creators a month. It can be TikTok or IG.
Right. And how did you test it out this time?
Oh, it went back to a lot of talking to customers. I think we had a very strong rapport with the creators and the brands, and also really testing out the first adopters, right? Hey, we're going to offer you this one, 1,500 ringgit. Why not? Let's test out. And then we also work with creators that we knew were very interested in this. And then going back to the database, we also found a niche that we were strong at, which was more of lifestyle, motherhood and family, maybe because of me, fashion and beauty and F&B. So we focused on these few industries first, went out to the brands that we were familiar with, and then tested and validated. So in August, we tested out with 1,500 ringgit and realized that, hey, this can jalan, but actually the profit margins weren't great. By January this year, we had tested out with 2,000 ringgit. And now we've kind of fixed the profit margins to give fairness for both us and the creators. And the clients are happy as well.
2,000 ringgit a month subscription fee?
For four content creators.
And We'll dive into the, you know, the revenue generation and where you see margins going, or how you're going to expand those margins in the longer term. But you've had multiple challenges in the last few years, right? Product market fit, the passing of a co-founder, COVID as well. What have been the key lessons you've learned in this journey so far?
You know, the key lesson is actually realizing that you cannot rely on, you cannot build a function around a person, right? You kind of have to build proper SOPs. The biggest lesson learned when Manisha passed away was we never properly had operations or playbook, right? And she had a full-fledged tech team. And actually, when Lina and I took over, we realized that we didn't know how to go in because there was no playbook. So my biggest lesson is having a playbook of some sort of SOPs. And number two is actually having proper financial planning. I think learning how much is one team's turnover, thinking about OKRs a lot better, and then a lot of financial management in terms of structuring the team.
And do you have a product market fit this time around?
You know, I feel like product market fit is such a definitive thing, right? But it's ever evolving, right? Yes. It's ever evolving because of, I think after all the stuff I've gone through, market conditions change, you know? So I think it's like a mindset, right? Always being beta, right? So right now, looking at our numbers, we've been profitable for the past 6 months. We have really good clients like Farmfresh, Bata Malaysia, Hotel Indigo. Right now, I track NPS score as well. It's 7.5. So on paper, it seems like I have product market fit, but in a mindset way, I feel like it's an ever-evolving, moving target. It's a goalpost, right? So that's how I feel.
Things change, but you are currently seemingly optimistic about the achievement of product market fit at this point.
Yes.
Charmaine, we got more to get into, but first we got to go into a few messages. Folks, I've been speaking with Charmaine Wong. She's the CEO and co-founder of Cult Creative, a Malaysian creator economy platform that's connecting brands with creators. I'm Roshan Gunnison. You're listening to Open for Business. We'll be back in just a bit, so keep it here at BFM 89.9, the business station.
Open for Business will reopen in a few moments. Powered by BossBully.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
Balanced Frank Medium, BFM 89.9.
Open for Business is powered by BossBolay.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to Open for Business. I'm Roshan Kunnison, and this morning I'm speaking with Charmaine Wong. She's the CEO and co-founder of Cult Creative, a Malaysian creator economy platform that's connecting brands with creators. Charmaine, earlier we got a sense for the change in direction that this company has been on, starting off earlier as a community, then it became a business focus on finding jobs for creatives in the space because LinkedIn wasn't doing the job at that point. And now you are a platform connecting brands with creators, a monthly subscription. You've moved into that space as well. You've raised 500,000 ringgit from The Hive specifically. Oh. You told the Vulcan Post that this would be used to develop your new proprietary creator collaboration platform. Mm. Specifically, you're going to be spending the money on tech, UX optimization and scalability, but also in community building initiatives. Talk to us a little bit about what this new proprietary creator collaboration platform looks like.
Okay, cool. I think comparing with a lot of our competitors, right, what they've built is they built a B2B first platform, right? Meaning they enable brands to come on. But I think what we're going to do is we're going to flip it. We've always been very creator obsessed even. So we're first of all going to build a creator platform, right? And this helps brands connect with opted-in creators, right? What that means is creators would actually first of all opt in to our platform and then they would actually create their own media kits. So Roshan yourself, you can actually have your own media kit. Mm. You can actually, because you will be linking your Instagram and TikTok, and we will actually have data from your community. So maybe you attract 25 to 35 year old men, right? So with that, right, maybe a shaving brand might want to connect with you because, hey, Roshan is a dude, you know, he speaks to the right audience. So we want to have data back numbers because I think what also sets us apart is that we came from, Manisha, Lina and I came from a creative background, advertising. So we are very much focused on campaign briefs. So understanding the customer segments, objectives, pain points, CTA, USP. So these are all very important things to work with creators, right? So in this new creator platform, they will have very clear campaign briefs from clients. And more importantly, agreements are done. Invoices are done, you know, none of the admin nonsense. I know a lot of creators hate that. But my favorite part is this thing called Cult Pay, right? And it's something that we're working towards. We know a lot of, there's a lot of late payment, right? 30, 60, 90 days. That's so common. It hasn't changed, right? Since I've been in this industry for over 15 years already. And what we want to do with Cult Pay is we want to enable creators to get early access payment. And that actually will help them a lot with their financial and cash flow management.
So I won't be getting WhatsApp messages from random agencies asking me for my rate card.
Yes.
You know, it can be all done on a platform that has the data on my end, but can also connect me with brands who are looking for the particular demographic. Now, you mentioned that you are, you know, you can connect people's TikTok accounts, Instagram accounts, that sort of thing. But are you not stepping on the toes of these big players like TikTok themselves?
I think there's a way to collaborate, though. At the end of the day, I think TikTok is so big and they want to kind of build smaller niche community groups, whether within Malaysia or within a niche market or niche industry segment. Mm. If we could find a way to partner with TikTok, I would love to have a cult creative TikTok collaboration where we talk about TikTok trends and we feed it off to our creators or KOLs and then they kind of jump on the TikTok trend ship, right? I think there's always a way for collaboration over competition.
Yeah, because so you do see yourself, even if TikTok, because TikTok Shop is so big now, right? And they're going to probably want to in-house some of this as well. But sometimes there are spaces for niches for other players to be in it. And you see yourself, you see a big enough niche for you to grow.
Yes. And on top of that, beyond the creator side, actually brands are coming to us asking us if we have creators that are familiar with social commerce, right? Live shop selling and whatnot. So brands are also coming to us. And I think we are a bridge at the end of the day for TikTok to kind of connect both brands and creators, whether it's generic content or even live commerce.
So at this point, not too worried that TikTok Shop or TikTok is going to come and eat your lunch, but we'll see how that plays out over the next few years.
Can we should do an event together first.
I'll try and put you in touch with TikTok on our end.
Thank you.
But now, big part of this building this moat is going to be the creators you have on your platform, because you've made a point to say we're creating this platform creator first. Mm. We'll acquire the creators, give them a platform that works for them, and then we'll get the brands. Tell us a little bit about the demographics on your platform today.
Okay, we have our majority is young millennials and Gen Zs, 25 to 35 year old. Interestingly, 65% female. Need more males out there. And they come from Malaysia, Indonesia, and a growing group of Singaporeans and Filipinos as well. And I wanted to add on just now, like, some of the key things we want to give back to our creators is we realize that AI is a very important tool, right? What we've noticed is some of the stronger creators are actually using AI to script, storyboard, and pitch a lot faster, a lot more efficient. So one of the things we're going to roll out when we introduce the platform is actually incorporating some sort of creator academy, using AI to guide them on how to script better, pitch better, build personal brand, speak to their audiences better. So that's actually a key component in our community building initiatives.
And in the longer term, is, I guess, you look to expand your margins as well. Are you looking to take on all those administrative tasks on your platform so that creators can focus on creating and don't have to worry about billing and payment and all these other things?
Yes, that is the ultimate goal, to be the number one trusted creator economy platform for creators to easily agreement sorted, invoice, and also early access payments.
You're actually doing a really good job of pitching me right now, so we'll yes. we'll sidebar this later. Because the business is going to revolve around having creators on your records. That's what you're selling to the brands you mentioned earlier, things like Butter and Farm Fresh. Mm. It's that you can connect them with creators that work for their brands, essentially. How are you managing, and this will come down to demand and supply on the platform. How are you managing your supply of creators? How are you incentivizing them and keeping them on?
Okay, good question. Actually, first of all, it goes back to the campaign brief, right? Bata comes on and they say, hey, Shamin, we've got a back to school segment, right, campaign, and we're looking for mothers with two kids within 2 years old to 8 years or whatever. And then with those data, right, we find, okay, 25, 35-year-old, two kids. So we actually have this database stored within us already. So with that, then we can confidently say, hey, we actually have 1,300 mothers within our community. We can easily do that for you. If you want any special requests, then we can go on from there. So we can, looking at the past 6 months, we've actually very confidently can say that we have the biggest segments in motherhood and family, health and wellness, fashion, and also F&B creators. So we focus on these first, right? We also work with brands that want these creators. That's how we manage the supply and demand right now.
Now, when you look at platforms like Spotify, for example, right? Yes, it's easy to incentivize the smaller players to come on, but it's usually the bigger ones that brands want to see next to their campaigns. Are you only able to attract the smaller creators instead of the big ones? Because Carol Aming doesn't necessarily need help to sell.
That's right.
How much was it he sold in 4 minutes worth of sambal? You know, so those kind of things. Are you catering towards the non-big creators?
The macros?
Yeah.
So right now we're more focused on, we call them the UGC creators, right? And we've been seeing a shift of brands moving more UGC. They
and
will not
UGC
forget
is?
The user-generated content. So these are guys in the nano creators, right? 1,000 to, no, below 10,000, and after that 10,000 onwards is micro, right? We are seeing a shift for brands, even for Bata and even Farm Fresh, they are doing a shift in terms of mixing maybe one or two macros and a lot of micro and nano creators. This actually creates more authenticity because if you actually plan it properly, you realize that, hey, why it's not just the macro creators talking about the product, but actually a lot of normal guys that you resonate with talking about the products as well. So first of all, we work with UGC creators, but we do have a database of KOLs for brands as well. So we try to support in a very holistic way.
These are essentially two product segments then, right? You've got the macro, you've got the smaller creators as well. People who, real, quote-unquote, real people that brands can tap into.
We call them branded content from everyday creators.
No wonder you're in the branding business. Now, revenue side of things. You have gone with the SaaS model, subscription model. You're charging now 2,000 ringgit a month for brands to subscribe to the platform and get four pieces of content a month, basically?
Yes, four different creators as well.
Okay, and is that the extent to the revenue generation, or are you looking at other ways to supplement to other revenue streams in the longer term?
Okay, so we have the... We start off with the starter kit, right, which is 2,000 ringgit. You get four creators, but it actually goes on to different packages. We have bigger sort of custom solutions. I'll give you an example. We have It's the Ship, the music festival. They are launching in Korea. So we have the Korean ship, and we're getting 70 content creators for that one. So we have bigger sort of, you call them enterprise solution in the SaaS world. But we have those as well. So it really boils down to how big the brand is, but we realize that the smaller SMEs, the startups are actually looking at the 2,000 ringgit starter kit.
Right. Jeremy, we've got to go into the 10:30 AM news bulletin. When we come back, I'll ask you about revenue generation, as well as where do you see growth coming from and the path to profitability? Although you kind of answered that a little earlier, didn't you? Folks, I've been speaking with Jermaine Wong. She's the CEO and co-founder of Cult Creative, a Malaysian creator economy platform that connects brands with creators. I'm Roshan Gunnison. You're listening to Open for Business. We're going into the news bulletin and we'll be back just after that. So keep it here to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Open for Business will reopen in a few moments. Powered by BossBully.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary. Behind famous men. BFM 89.9, the business station. Open for Business is powered by BossBully.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to Open for Business. I'm Roshan Gunnison, and this morning I've been speaking with Jermaine Wong, CEO and co-founder of Cult Creative, a Malaysian creator economy platform that's connecting brands with creators. Jermaine, we've gotten a good sense for where you are today. This company started off trying to network creatives together to help them get jobs. It was a community-driven thing. But over the last 3.5 to 4 years, you've now moved into a platform connecting brands with creators, and you've moved towards the SaaS model, the subscription model, as opposed to one of success fees and job fees. Let's talk about revenue. Earlier, you gave us a sense for, again, the SaaS model. What can you tell us about where you are in terms of revenue generation today? And let's take in mind that also the model has changed.
Yes.
Tell us when the model changed and then give us a sense for revenue.
Okay, the model changed exactly last year in August. We went all out with the creator economy model. Last year, we closed at 360K, which was already it's a 4.5x multiplier from the year before. And this year, we're very confident that we can do 5x of that because, number one, for the monthly subscription model, right? How it works is brands have to commit to 3 months. And because of that, we could easily manage the cost a lot more efficiently. And it's almost, hey, if my team can do 10 brands in the first month, can we do 12 and then 15? So it's a lot easier to manage right now.
And so if you hit that 5X, you enter seven-figure territory by this time next year, or at least when we enter the new year. Now, the thing is, when you enter this SaaS business model, the subscription business model, you enter now the problem that Netflix and Spotify all face, right? Is you've got to keep people subscribed.
Yep.
You've got to manage churn.
Yep.
How are you going to do that and keep brands on the platform in the longer run?
Good question. One of my key OKRs is retention rate, also that month-on-month growth. But even founders underestimate this, right? It's actually customer happiness and team happiness score. Retention rate, how we track this is every month, every 3 months when a campaign finishes, we will generate a report And that's how we renew. Quite easily, because it's only 2,000 ringgit, a lot of the brands renew. So right now, we have a 90% retention rate. A lot of them even top up because they're like, hey, Eid is coming around. You know, I need to pump in more to get more content out there. Number two is actually the customer happiness score. I think a lot of brands don't do enough surveys or, you know, customer feedback. They don't talk to them enough. And how retention happens is actually you need to ask like, hey, how was my service, man? Do you like it? Three things you love about the brand. Three things that we can do better. Any other service you want to see from the company itself. So, and that scoring is very important. I learned that you have to keep a minimum of 7 points. And last but not least is actually team happiness. How we have strong retention goes back to customer happiness. And how to have happy customers, you have to have a happy team. So lately, I've been actually doing something new called Weather Report. 15 minutes check in with the team every day to just see how they're doing, areas that I can help them, and then areas that they can actually like, hey, I want to do more jobs. I want to actually, Charmaine, I want to do more fashion brands. Okay, so this is where I can kind of find out how happy they are, what is there anything I need to come in or not.
All right, so just following up on that a little bit, you are paying a lot of attention to surveying the end customer for these brands. Is customer intelligence going to be a key, I guess, part of the business going forward? If you can tell brands that we know what customers are doing, that's going to be very valuable. So is that something that you're focused on?
Yes, definitely. I think beyond just the performance and data from the creators, right? What we also realize a challenge for brands is they don't know how to sell their USP, right? And I don't know, maybe something we need to work on down the line is having AI to, you know, create campaign briefs for them, write better, you know, USP, you know, or even objectives. So right now on our campaign brief we've made it very simple. It's a lot of drop downs, right? Whether you are trying to get more downloads, attract a new Gen Z audience. So a lot of it is very itemized and drop down so that we can clearly know that this is what the client is looking for. So the goal is, of course, beyond performance, is also implementing some sort of AI to help them with their campaign briefs so that it helps us find a better pool of creators for them.
You want to hit 5x growth this year. That's the aim that you want to see. What's going to get you there? What's going to drive growth?
Ooh. I think going back to the three things. Retention, keeping it at least 70%. Customer happiness above 7%, and also team happiness. I really think people underestimate that. And, you know, having a strong team, having a strong culture, people come motivated. And a lot of these Gen Z professionals now, they actually want empowerment. They want mentorship. It's not just about money. It's about, like, you know, feeling seen and heard. Yeah.
Now, growth is great, but profitability is cool again. And growth at all costs is no longer the be-all and all. And we talked a little earlier about how that was a big stumbling block in the early days, where the growth at all costs mentality forced you to, you know, try and grow without really getting that product market fit as it was. How are you managing it? You've hit profitability already, but you are at a smaller base. How are you going to manage this, the need to grow while managing your profitability?
Good question. There was an article from HBR, right, that said, how do you achieve scalability? First of all is profitability. Second is network effects. And the third one is your war chest. So we've got profitability a little bit, you know. So now it's building the network effects, right? Building a strong pool of creators that are, you know, we call them cult certified. Cult certified creators, you get more gigs. You get access to bigger brands and also brands as well. You get access to better creators. The third one is the war chest, right? So we're lucky enough to get funding from the Hive that helps us build the platform so that we can do more jobs and a lot more efficient and cost effective.
Now, I understand that you've also been a recipient, or you are a recipient of Cradle Fund. So tell us a little bit about that and how that's going to add to your war chest.
Ooh, okay. So the Cradle Fund one, this was the second time we applied for it. And because they saw a potential with this new business model, during then, it was actually picking up. We tripled our first few months and they actually trusted the new platform, right? The new business model. So the Cradle Fund is going to help us, of course, build the technology as well. But also, we want to validate new opportunities, especially CultPay, beyond just the what we want to build with the B2B side, creator side. I think CultPay is an opportunity, but going back to all these lessons and failures learned is going back to like validating focus groups and then also fine-tuning what we can offer and add value to the creators.
I've seen a key theme come along with a lot of platforms and marketplaces, fintech solutions becoming very key. In the gig economy, it's early wage access and or embedded insurance and the margin that comes with that. Tell us a little bit about how you're going to be using fintech to expand your margins over time.
First of all, I'm no finance person, but I think what sets me apart is I know the creators' pain point. I've been working with creators for over 15 years, and I know the biggest pain point is cash flow, right? So first of all, we're going to help them with digitizing their invoices and agreements. That's first step. Second step is allowing early creator payouts. And then after that is a lot of financial education, sort of empowering them to become beyond a gig worker, going to a micro business owner. For example, I've seen one creator that used to earn 200 ringgit in his first month, and last month we paid him 5,000 ringgit. So we know that this creator has potential. You know, he is hungry. He wants to become an entrepreneur himself. So it's almost identifying these groups of creators that want to become entrepreneurs and empowering them with not just tools, but also education as well. So I'm calling out, you know, fintech partners to almost guide creators on how to become better business owners. Whether there's even any micro lending opportunities for creators, right? Giving them 5,000 ringgit to buy better equipment, I think it's so good for them. So that's something we're working towards.
And a big part of the CultPay project will be credits, alternate credit scoring.
We hope so. We hope to. I don't know whether banks would still accept creators, right? But I think maybe first step is working with micro lending partners or even peer to peer partners to, you know, work with us to identify which creators have behavior data sets that can show potential, right? And then just giving them 5,000 ringgit to 10,000 ringgit just to show the growth, you know, and see how they grow as a creator and business owner.
Yeah, I mean, conversations with people, even like funding societies, it's all about data sets and at the day, and being allowing them to score the confidence level that people will pay back their money, like basically that's what it comes down to in the lending ecosystem.
Maybe we can even work with GrabPay or GrabBank, right?
Mm-hmm. XBank, also if you're listening, apparently Shamin wants to have a conversation with you. Shamin, to wrap up our conversation, two more questions here. One, are you still in fundraising mode?
I think it's important to have warm conversations, but I think right now we're not intentional to fundraise. But I can see the next horizon, right? And I know that we're working towards fintech. So right now, after speaking to so many investors, I know the type of VCs we need to talk to. So we're keeping conversations warm, but we're going to be very strategic already. But fundraising and conversations, I think I'm going to reword it. Connections is important, right? Authentic connections. So you be authentic, keep people updated with what you're doing, and then show progress and yeah, just be authentic.
And the thing that is always on that will be on investors' minds in the long run is how they're going to get their exit from the company. I mean, there are various ways of doing this, of course. Typically speaking, it's either an IPO and M&A for the company itself. For this kind of business that you're building, what do you think is the most likely kind of exit?
I think, first of all, we need to talk about building a solid foundation, talking about I want to build a long-lasting brand. I don't want to just build a viral brand. And I see the brand evolving beyond Cult Creative into Cult Pay, you know, maybe a cult co-working space. I don't know. But I feel like I'm very open to opportunities. I'm going to just be woo and trust the process, the universe. And I mean, we're open to strategic M&A, so trust.
Keeping options open.
Keep it open. Trust the flow.
But the ecosystem is what you're really trying to grow in the long term. Cult Creative, Cult Pay, Cult Co-working Space. It'll be interesting to see your journey, Shamin. And I look forward to seeing it.
Thank you so much, Roshan, for having me.
Charmaine, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for your time. Folks, I've been speaking with Charmaine Wong. She's the CEO and co-founder of Cult Creative, a Malaysian creator economy platform that's connecting brands with creators, at least for now. That's what they're only doing. I'm Roshan Kanesan, so keep it here to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Are you open for business? Register your company with BossBelay.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.